Welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, episode number 149.
Woo!
It's the final ever real Starcade.
Are you so excited?
It's not our last Starcade, though.
I mean, no. God, no. But, like, honestly, Starcade has never felt like a big show to me.
Yeah.
It does. This is just another pay-per-view, man.
Yeah, I think some of that is just the magic of video packages of WWE has never done one on Starcade and why it's a big deal. Like, the most you get is Tony Schiavone going, think about all the memories of Ric Flair and this person, and also Ric Flair and this person.
Yeah, so Ric Flair is just the only thing Starcade has going for it. And there was no build for this either, so...
And Ric Flair's not wrestling tonight.
Right. Who would care? There was zero build. Who cares?
But I'm Nick alongside Emily.
Hello.
Emily, you clearly were not excited for Starcade 2000.
It just feels like another show.
It really does.
It doesn't feel special. It doesn't feel like a culmination of storylines. It doesn't feel like the end of a chapter. It doesn't feel like anything. It just feels like a show.
I wonder how much of that is the fact that the main event build, I guess, I mean, well, all the builds, but the main event build has not been good.
Like so. I said, there was no build. There was no build.
But Starcade 2000 took place on December 12th, 2000 at the MCI Center, now the Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C.
So in a different universe, we would have gone to the show.
Yeah.
We've gone to shows at the Capital One Arena many times.
Let's see. I have an average ticket price if I do the numbers.
Would we have gone price-wise?
It was an average ticket price of $45.
Woof. In 2000? That would be expensive.
Now, however, the WWE was just in Baltimore, and we could have got there for like $50 each. And
yeah.
We went, nah, never mind.
Yeah, we could have gone to the post-Christmas show.
That was nosebleeds.
So, $45 in 2000, though. That's expensive in 2025. Like, inflation-wise?
But also the average ticket, so there's going to be cheaper ones.
Yeah,
more
sure, but
ones.
Still, inflation-wise, that's pretty pricey. Who would pay that much for this show?
I'll tell you who did not pay for this show.
Most people
at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, this show did 50,000 buys. If you want a relative historic number, last year, they did 145,000 buys, and 2 years ago... they did 460,000 buys.
So this is bad.
Yeah. I don't really have a lot of backstage notes. One of them is the actual attendance and gate, where it was 3,465 actually paid for the show with a gate of $157,000.
Woof. Okay.
Relative to WWE, who we recently noted WrestleMania went on sale around the same week as this, they make easily more than a million.
Yeah. That's not much.
And my only other backstage note for this show is Dustin Runnels was told to be at Starcade, and they didn't have anything for him, so he went home again.
Sure.
He's on a $750,000 contract.
Jesus.
So, if you did Starcade five times, you could pay him.
What killed WCW? Poor money management. Why the hell were you paying these people so much to sit at home?
I don't know what it says about my brain that you went, what killed that? My brain went, Ice Age.
What?
So with basically no backstage notes, let's go right into the weather report. Because also, this is a lengthier show, and I got a lot of notes for some of the matches.
Jeez.
And also, this weather report, I'm like, ooh, this is a nice brisk one. It's one show. The next weather report I have to do is going to be a long one.
Yeah, I feel like I should watch some of the thunders with you for the next one because you have a lot to talk about.
Oh, and it's weather. There's always thunder. Sorry, I didn't properly set that up. I feel the need to note that, again, this was taped right after Nitro. The show starts with low-energy office promos from Mike Sanders and then Ric Flair. Commentary in this show was Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Conan.
Honestly, I think that might be worse than Stevie Ray.
It actually wasn't. The thing is, when he doesn't have a storyline input into any of the matches, he actually wasn't bad. He's doing commentary now, too, which...
Conan is?
Yeah, he just sounds old.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like an entertaining person to listen to on commentary.
Lance Storm tries to get out of singing the national anthem as he doesn't know the words. And Jim Duggan's like, oh, well, I know the words. I can teach you. It's like, yeah, he would know the words, wouldn't he? Chavo Guerrero is put in a tag team match and is told to find a partner, but he can't, so it's a handicap match. Corporal Cajun wants to help him, but General Erection won't let him help Chavo. Sid is on the phone and says he's 15 minutes away from the arena. Later on, he's somehow lost for effectively the whole show. I'm like...
I mean, it is the time before GPS.
this was taped after Nitro. They're in the same
building. It's a story.
It still makes him look like a fucking idiot.
You're diving too deeply into that.
Yeah. But also, he looks stupid for just being lost to the whole show, too. Well,
yes, but it's a story, babe.
Scott Steiner attacks Kiwi in a cut segment, and Meng finds him in a different cut segment that sets up our main event. He also just asks Ric Flair for the match, which always just feels weird to be like, it's Meng going, hey, Rick, Scott Steiner attacked my friend. I want to fight him. It's like, who are you?
Yeah. Just hearing Meng talk is weird.
Bam Bam Bigelow very politely asks to go out with Marie. So she throws water in his face, and then he's beat down by Reno and Vito.
Jeez.
I'm like, what the fuck?
Guess nice guys always finish last.
Like, Bam Bam is a heel. Like, he was not creepy at all. Like, yeah. That's what you needed for the segment to work. Like, no, he was just, you know.
Just a guy.
Yeah, you want to go out sometime? And then, bam!
Yeah.
We then get Lance Storm singing the national anthem. It's as bad as you assume, because he doesn't know the words. And then Jim Duggan is more than happy to sing, and the backing track they use is so fast and has no lead up.
Mm.
So everyone's late every time they try to sing it. The Cat interrupts this for some reason, and he then faces Hacksaw. And during the match, an obvious plant holds a sign saying, Hacksaw, come home. We love you.
Ugh.
And this causes Duggan to stop hitting the Cat and goes to rip off the Team Canada shirt, but he's bad at taking off a shirt, so the Cat kicks him mid-removal and wins.
Ugh. Sure.
Team Canada then leave Duggan behind, and Duggan plays the crowd. Like, it definitely seems like he has left Team Canada here.
Okay. I mean, it didn't seem so blatantly obvious last Nitro, so, I mean, I guess it's good that they're, like, moving that forward on Thunder?
Yeah, we kind of moved the goalposts again on this show.
Yeah, well.
Because this show likes to pretend this whole segment didn't happen.
True, fair.
For some reason, Lex Luger has his mid-90s generic Biddle music, and he's facing Sarge and gets beat down for most of the match. Until he hits Sarge with, like, a baseball bat and then hits a torture rack. He wins. He took out Goldberg earlier. It's like, what was the point of this?
Yeah.
I don't care about Sarge.
It's filler. So, like, yeah, Sarge is just a filler character.
They are still really avoiding saying the name Tori Wilson.
Yeah, why? Is there some sort of, like, lawsuit?
No. They wanted her to sign a contract for way less money. She said no. And now they're pretending she never existed.
Weird.
And post-main event, Sid Vicious comes out to chokeslam Scott Steiner. Sid was apparently supposed to chokeslam Steiner through the ring, but they messed up the spot, so it was just a chokeslam.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I don't even know how you do that wrong, but...
Cool.
The crowd didn't notice, because it was just, cool, hey, he chokeslammed him, yeah. But it was meant to be this big, oh my god, no.
So, I have a question for you. How have you been feeling about Thunder recently, and what is your plan for Thunders moving forward now that we're losing... the WWE Network.
I have the Thunders as well.
Oh, God. Why? Why did you download the Thunders?
I haven't downloaded them, but they're on the Internet Archive, and I have that.
Okay, but how have you been feeling about the degradation of Thunders?
It's not a degradation, where it feels like they don't care about 85% of it, and they really, really care about 15.
Yeah.
And that 15 is why I have to do the notes.
I guess, yeah. It's just... recently, over the last couple episodes, it's felt like every time you've done a Thunder report, you're recapping segments that happen on the following show.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre.
Yeah, they're like test running angles.
It feels like a test run. It's very strange. So, like, yeah, I was just curious. Like, do you feel like Thunder is still worth watching?
I mean, I'm going to keep noting
it. You're still going to, but is it worth watching?
No.
From, like, the consumer standpoint.
It hasn't been worth watching in... maybe ever, but definitely not in more than 6 months. Yeah. Well, I think that's enough of the Gaga, brother.
The Gaga?
Yes, that's basically Hulk Hogan code for faff.
Sure.
As opposed to his definition of kayfabe, brother.
Kayfabe. That is the fucking stupidest thing. Because kayfabe is literally already Pig Latin. Why are we muddying it more? But my God.
I also think he doesn't double down. I think it's just the one. It's just the start of the word.
Who says kazay kafabe? Because somebody does.
I don't know.
It's dumb. It's redundant.
Is it a 2008 wrestler Kazarni?
Just go on. Just move on.
Yeah, Starrcade 2000. Let's get into
Christ.
It. Our main show. First, actually, we have to get into the poster because...
Oh God, this poster. It's like it's trying to knock off like classic old James Bond almost. But badly, obviously.
Well, you're just thinking the circles leading up to the credits thing. Yeah,
I mean, it gives James Bond.
Yeah, but two of the four men are not on this show.
So describing the poster, it is a black poster with four circles Maybe it's white. It might be a white poster. Whatever.
It depends on the medium, honestly.
It's four circles with like a color hue over each of them with one person's face in each. It's Scott Steiner, Booker T, Sting, and oh my God, who was the fourth?
Bill.
Bill Goldberg. How could I forget Bill? And you noted that two out of the four of these people are not actually on the show. So yeah. It's kind of weird to advertise them.
I was thinking about it in terms of about a year from this point, post-invasion, WWE is going to do Armageddon 2000. Or, no, actually, it's not Armageddon. It's Vengeance, the first one. And they have Triple H on the poster who missed the entire invasion. And he doesn't show up at that show.
Oh.
Yeah. So much like that, Sting and Booker T, they're not here tonight.
This is just weird.
Also, I feel the need to note that this show is sponsored by WCW.com, which means we could not get a sponsor.
Yeah.
No one wants to give us any money.
Now's a good time to say that this podcast is sponsored by the Butts in the Seats Patreon. Go over to our Patreon page for $5 a month. You get all kinds of stuff. Go on over.
We just did Starrcade 96 over there, and in my brain, I'm like, babe, no, this is the one going on the Patreon. Nope. No, it's not.
Nope. We're doing too much Starrcade.
We only have one more Starrcade after this. It's fine.
Honestly, good. I'm tired of this.
We then get the opening package, which actually focuses on a good handful of matches and not just the main event.
Yeah, it's actually a fairly effective show package to kick the show off. Which is saying something for a WCW. It's not always effective.
Yeah, the music is still lame for this, though. I mean, like, yeah. They never went the route of, all right, we're going to have like an official theme for this show. Or like, hey, you know, thanks to fucking
Motorhead.
Yeah.
The Weeknd, I don't think has been, he's been born, but he's not writing music yet. And Fiend, of course, hasn't been written. Nothing has ever matched Fiend.
We get opening pyro, and Tony Schiavone notes that the election may have been decided, but there's plenty of, like, bad blood here or something. And it's like, oh yeah, the election was decided on the 13th, which would have been the day of the last Thunder, but because they pre-tape everything, they did not know.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in D.C., so it's all weird dissension.
On commentary, we have Tony Schiavone, Scott Hudson, and for the second last time, Mark Madden. He's back.
I really thought you had told me that this was his last one.
No, he missed Nitro because he was suspended. He comes back for this one, but he has this one and Nitro.
Okay. I think when you said he comes back for it, I thought this was the last one.
He gets fired over the holiday.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Mark. I mean, technically, so does Pamela, too.
So she still technically is contracted.
Yeah, but she's not here tonight and not on the next Nitro. And
yeah, well.
Yeah, we have one more Mark Madden show, which I looked a little more into, and it's just like, it really seems like they just wanted to be fucking done with him. Because, like, why did he get fired? Well, there's 87 reasons, but none of them are really a main one.
Does that leave us with Stevie Ray until the end?
No, and I think we glossed over this the other week, that we are, on paper, done with Stevie Ray on commentary.
All right, everybody note that. Write that down.
Per a Wikipedia article actually breaking down the commentary teams, he does not do commentary. He doesn't wrestle. I know he like co-hosts the Best of Thunder over the holiday, but I don't think he does commentary for an actual show. I think it's just Tony Schiavone and Scott Hudson going forward.
Nitro. It'd be really funny if somebody listening to this went and edited the Wikipedia article with some like incorrect information just so that you felt like a fool.
Yeah, well, you have to edit the fucking common English version. It's such a weird article. We've mentioned this before, but it's not the main one. It's some common language.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Anyway. Tangents.
Yeah. Tony Schiavone, Scottson, Mark Madden. And we go pretty quickly into our opening match. It is a ladder match for a Cruiserweight title shot. That there's six people involved, but they advertise this as three different teams.
So it's not a tag match. It's just a ladder match.
Well, we'll get to that. But again, only one person can win,
right.
But it's a tag match.
But it's not a tag match if only one person can win.
Correct. Like, a tag match and a ladder match, you know, it can be a tag team ladder match per TLC and all that.
Yeah, but the team wins.
Yes. And our teams today are 3 Count, a.k.a. 2 Count, versus Noble and Courageous, versus the Young Dragons with Leia Miao. And the first person out is actually Chavo Guerrero, the Cruiserweight Champion, and he comes out to the LWO music.
The show kind of just starts cold with him coming out, don't you think?
Yeah, I think the fact that we never hear a ring announcer and there is not like a host kind of thing, I think hurts a lot of these shows.
I mean, like, there are WrestleManias that, like, quote-unquote start cold. Like, there's not a host, but, like, there is a clear start to the show with like America the Beautiful or something, and then that leads into a match. But like in later years, there's somebody who comes out and is like, welcome to WrestleMania, and this being their WrestleMania, for lack of a better term, I would expect something along those lines. But again, this just like feels weird and cold.
Yeah, I think it doesn't help that it's like, all right, cool, we're doing this match, and out comes Chavo, and your first instinct is, why?
He's not in this match.
Like, oh, he's joining commentary. And before the match even starts, commentary is like, so is this a tag match or is it not? Or
does Chavo even know?
Per the end of this match, no. And everyone comes out to the ring, and everyone then gets on the apron. And we start with Shannon Moore and Kaz Hayashi. And I'm like, wait, this is a ladder match. Why are we doing tags?
But it's a tag match.
Also, per the last Nitro, if this is a three-team match, there should be three of you in the ring. That's what you established in the last show. Unless that was just bullshit to set up a handicap situation, which it clearly was when we called at the time. What happens if they come in the ring? You going to DQ them?
I mean, did I hear bullshit chants right away on this? I don't know. I swear I heard something being chanted right away.
Well, I guess now is a good time as any to kind of chat about the crowd. Crowd is mostly dead tonight.
They don't give a fuck.
But you wouldn't always know that because they are pumping in crowd noise. Not crowd reactions.
No.
Crowd noise.
You called it a rumble.
Yeah.
If you were just looking down and taking notes the way we were, you wouldn't really know that the audience didn't give a fuck. But the second you look up and see that nobody on camera is popping, nobody's reacting.
No one has their mouth open. It's just arms crossed. Just
nothing.
Like,
There's a grumpus about three rows down from the very top of the screen. Just doesn't want to be there.
And to add to it, I said Shannon Moore and Kaz actually start. And the first thing that happens is Moore drops Kaz on his head.
Oh, God.
He manages to recover and hit a head scissors, but you can see he's pretty shaken up.
Yeah, that's the first of like three botches from Kaz tonight, too.
I don't know if that's him or Moore.
I think it's Kaz. I think he's the common denominator in this.
Shane Moore goes for one of the ladders, but then is stopped by Evan Courageous. Then Yang and Helms tag in.
Yeah, can I just say, Shane Helms is looking good. He looks good in this match. Like, he's looking fit. He's got the long hair. He's got the scruffy beard. Like, Shane, I know I'm a married lady, but give me a call.
Then everyone goes for the ladder up on the ramp and everybody brawls. Three count, then double back to the ring and pull a ladder out from under the ring. Like, oh, we're smart. But unfortunately, they are stopped by the Young Dragons who tip them off the ladder. And then the Dragons are stopped by Noble and Courageous. So the tags are just over now.
Yeah, they finally caught on to like, wait a second, this is a ladder match.
And additionally, we get a good shot of the contract and we see it's being held up by a Home Depot spring clamp. Like,
I think you have like three of these in your trunk right now.
Yeah, I do. Like with the rubber tip still on, which I don't know whether that's better or worse for holding a contract.
Worse. Well, practically it's probably better, but aesthetically it's worse.
In the match, Yang dropkicks a ladder into Noble and Courageous, and Mark Madden says that Chang is unbelievable, which just felt racist in the moment. I don't know that it was actually.
Because it's not anybody's name.
Kaz moonsaults onto the ladder on Noble and Courageous. Scott Hudson does call Yang Jimmy Yang at one point.
Which so he does know his name.
I think it's the first time they actually mentioned a first name for him.
A first name?
Well, yeah, Jimmy Yang?
Yeah, I thought we always knew his first name.
This came up the other week. We know who he goes on to be Jimmy Wang Yang. He's only been called Yang here so far.
Oh, wow, I don't think I realized that.
Noble and Courageous hit a double drop toe hold onto Helms into a ladder in the corner. Then try for a double flapjack or something onto Kaz, who, again, lands really awkwardly. And Chavo Guerrero sums it up with, on his head again.
Yeah, that's two. Kaz is not on his game tonight.
He didn't get a lot of rotation on this one. That kind of seemed to be the problem.
I'm telling you, it's Kaz. It's not the other wrestlers. Everybody else is doing fine.
Jamie Noble then climbs the ladder and then is stopped by his partner, Evan Courageous, and they're mad at each other because you're trying to win this match? I'm like, yeah, because it's stupid that this is even remotely a tag match. I hate this spot in regular ladder matches, let alone whatever the fuck this is.
I don't hate this in regular tag matches. I mean, like, when you think of, like, Money in the Bank.
It happens in every one. Wait, you're trying to win? Like, also every triple threat or fatal four-way where there's a team in there.
Yeah.
They have the moment of, whoa.
We're supposed to be a team.
I didn't know you would want to win this match. It's like, come on.
I don't hate it as much as you do. I get it.
Yang hits a missile dropkick, sending Noble into Courageous, then throws Noble into the ladder and punches Moore into sitting on the ladder. Moore then tries a diving crossbody from a horizontal ladder in the corner, but Yang counters with a gutbuster, then hits a corkscrew moonsault from the same ladder, which notably is lower than the top rope. So for Shannon Moore's one, it kind of looked lame because it's not the max height. For Yang, it's like, oh, you got the rotation from a lower height. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's like, mixed goals there.
It's just, this, I mean, overall, this is a clunky match. I will give you that.
Helms dives on the Yang on the floor, followed by Kaz, then Evan Courageous, then Shannon Moore. Jamie Noble then climbs the ladder and is tipped off onto the floor onto all the other men by Yang. Yang sets up a ladder bridge from the ropes to a ladder in the ring, notably not directly under the contract.
Yeah.
Evan Courageous hits a back suplex, then gets on the bridge and counters a Kazayashi dive with a power slam off of the bridge. Shannon Moore springboards onto the ladder bridge, then hits a sloppy diving famouser on Evan Courageous, which looked almost more like an accidental dropkick to the back of the neck.
Oof.
Shane Helms hits a Twist of Fate neckbreaker onto Jamie Noble Jesus. From the bridge, complete with the, like, Hardy Boys hand motion.
We get it. You're friends, I guess.
Yeah. They're all from North Carolina. Like, they all are friends.
Are they actually friends, or do they just know each other and, like, watch each other's
stuff? I'm pretty sure they're friends. I know Shannon Moore is definitely friends with them, so I'm fairly certain Helms is as well.
Are you sure you're not just projecting 2010 TNA onto this?
No, there's the Hardy Boys show, and Shannon Moore is all fucking over that thing. Not in a good way.
Yeah.
I think Helms is still employed somewhere at that time. That's why he's not there.
Okay.
In the ring, two ladders get set up, and the crowd is just popping for them being on the screen. Jamie Noble hits a sunset flip powerbomb on Helms from the ladder. Then Shannon Moore and Yang, who were on the other sides of the ladder, have to, like, awkwardly step over to get to the other side to do their spot. Because Moore does a big, like, sleeper slam off the ladder, but it was like, just do it from your side. It won't look as forced.
Yeah. I don't know. Every move in this match feels very unsure of itself. And they don't have, like, good chemistry, these three teams. So they don't really know how to yes and each other.
I disagree on the chemistry thing. They've done nothing but wrestle each other for
the past. That does not mean they have good chemistry. That just means they're forced in the same room as each other.
No, I think they're not regularly doing ladder matches. So, you know, who knows how many times they went through any of the spots.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're communicating.
I mean, the TLC matches are not perfect either.
No, but I think that, like, the Hardys, Edge, Christian, and, like, the Dudleys actually were in a room together and, like, okay, let's run some spots.
They were, because everyone told Jeff, hey, this one spot's stupid. Don't do it. And he went, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, so they were at least in the same room. Would you believe
it? He fucked it up.
Was that the, like, stepping across
yes.
the tops? Yeah.
But we will get to that match. That is Mania. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Mania. I love that match.
I think I already have that penciled in for your best bit for that show.
Yeah.
Leia Miao stops Jamie Noble from climbing until Evan Courageous just scares her off, and then she whips Yang on the apron, who just kind of like, ah, fuck.
She just, like, takes her little whip and just slaps him, like, get your shit together.
She is once again falling out of her top.
Yeah, I think that's the goal. I mean, listen, she looks good. She's got the body for it. Like, good for you, girl.
The Dragons hit a crisscross powerbomb on Courageous, then set up a scaffolding-like platform with four of the ladders. Three count throw Kazayashi's head into the platform ladder, which almost takes out the whole structure because he bumped too hard.
Yeah.
So when they do it to Yang a second later, I'm like, oh, he bumped a lot lighter. Interesting.
Yeah. He's very aware of vibrations.
Three count go to climb, but are stopped by Noble and Courageous. Jamie Noble hits a tombstone on Moore, and then Evan Courageous is like, I'm just going to stomp him. Like, nothing fun. Kazayashi tries to climb, but Evan Courageous stops him, and Hayashi takes a, like, falling flip bump while laying down on the ladder. He just, like, goes ass over tea kettle and just, like, face bumps. Like, all right.
Sure.
It's not a bump I see, but
Face bump is just a wild sentence.
Yang kicks Evan Courageous off the ladder, and he bounces his whole body off the top rope. Tony Schiavone shouts, he hit the turnbuckle! And I'm like, he landed in the dead center of the ropes.
He's like, fine.
He literally was as close to each turnbuckle as he could be. He did not touch them.
No.
Yang and Helms brawl on the ladder until Shannon Moore grabs the ladder to vault himself up into a head scissors, and after that vaults himself up back up onto the ladder.
This was a cool spot.
Yeah.
He's just, like, powering himself up. That's athletic as hell.
I think we kind of glossed over the actual, like, balancing act of doing all this stuff on these platforms. It's ladders that have rungs. They're not, like, a flat thing.
Yeah, you calling them platforms, I think, gives them too much stability.
Like,
it's just a suspended ladder.
I think it is the SummerSlam TLC match where, like, Edge and Christian win by standing on top of, like, a table on top of ladders.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, you can't, like, slip through the center there.
No, you gotta be careful about where you're shifting your weight to.
Shane Helms hip tosses Jamie Noble off a ladder and then three count stare down on top of the platform, then shake hands and take the contract down together, which garners boos. And I'm like, oh, so the heel team are friends and do like the Noble thing and...
The Noble thing?
I'm like, this doesn't work as like a heel finish. And just Mark, it does help that Mark, cute, Mark Madden's like, oh, this is like bullshit. And
they're buddies.
Chavo Guerrero's like, so who am I facing tomorrow? And commentary's like, oh, yes. We don't know.
It's cute. See, this is a way that you can get around the like the teamwork thing as opposed to doing the like, oh my god, I can't believe you won. Like have one of those, have a fucking Goblet of Fire moment where it's like, all right, both of us win.
Who's the spare, Emily?
Figure it out.
Emily, who's the spare?
In my eyes, Shannon Moore is the spare.
Well, I think they asked him, do you want to be the spare? And he said, Dilly Gaff.
You know, I haven't quit the podcast in a while.
That's not true. Chavo Guerrero had a line during this that you hated.
Probably.
Which was, oh man, this is one of the best ladder matches I've ever seen.
We've been talking about these TLC matches in WWE.
Only that one of them line, has happened.
That, well, pre-LC and TLC yeah. one have happened. That line implies that Chavo Guerrero did not see those matches.
I mean, he said one of the best.
There's no way.
I mean, outside of those two, there have not been a lot of mainstream multi-man ladder matches. And I think these guys took a lot more big bumps than a lot of the TLC matches. Those are better paced and better put together. This seemed like, we don't know what to do, so we're just going to throw our bodies at the problem.
I mean, yeah.
Which, like, props to them.
But this isn't well crafted. Yeah. Like, if you put this in the same atmosphere as pre-LC or TLC 1, like, you're wrong.
Now, granted, Chavo did also say matches he's seen. Maybe he hasn't seen those matches.
He saw it.
Maybe we didn't see him.
He saw it.
Now, granted, I feel like you're crapping this match a little bit. Think about this match in terms of the scope of WCW, and I need you to grade on that curve. Because, holy shit, you know what these guys are doing? Working? They're trying.
Yeah.
they are actually trying and giving a shit. Which
we've been saying that about 3 Count. Like, they do try. Like, the Cruiserweights always try. And I respect the fuck out of him for that.
But admittedly, this match was chaotic and not always good chaos. Occasionally good, but...
In that sense, you're right. It does deserve a little bit more props.
I think there were enough fun spots and enough time for this to, like, actually give it good energy.
That's true. And
be a good match.
It definitely did have the right energy. Okay, fine. All right, then.
I mean, of the things on this show, you can tell people to not watch this match?
Yes, because, like, why are you watching this show? Like, well, don't watch the show.
Let's go backstage. Jim Duggan is polishing his 2x4, not a euphemism. And Lance Storm comes in to manipulate him and then tries to bring Duggan back to Team Canada.
Yeah, Lance Storm gives him this whole speech about like loyalty and if you weren't with Team Canada, like they were writing your pink slip before you joined with us, so you owe us everything. Like, just manipulative as hell.
And again, really just kind of ignoring the Thunder segment. Just going to pretend that didn't happen. So we'll get more on that later. Elsewhere backstage, we get Jeff Jarrett and the Harris Boys approaching Mike Sanders. They're upset about the stipulation. They want the match tonight to be a bunkhouse brawl as opposed to a filthy animal street fight. Emily, tell me the difference between a bunkhouse brawl and a filthy animal street fight.
I was literally going to ask you.
Yeah, it does not fucking matter. It's the same goddamn stipulation.
Well, guess what? Compromise? It's both.
Yeah, which really nullifies it.
Yeah, what the fuck? It's just a hardcore match.
Oh, you missed a segment from this, by the way. They also made this a Filthy Animals Bunkhouse Nigerian drum match.
Fuck you. There was not one drum. Okay, at least in the Nigerian drum match, there were drums present. There's not a drum present here. You can't pull that.
Hard cut from that to fucking Chronic in a sauna. Just
weird vibes.
Two sweaty dudes just hanging out pretty naked.
Listen, I respect saunas. I love a sauna.
Do you respect wood?
Do you? Because they respect wood, clearly, in a sauna. It's just a little... I don't want to say homoerotic.
No, that is the phrase.
It's just given vibes. I don't know. Two young, relatively attractive men. Muscular yeah. men. Hot, naked, and sweating.
Well, let's move out of that. Our next match, it's Lance Storm with Major Guns and Elix Skipper versus The Cat with Miss Jones. And the theme of tonight, we get a lot of like replays in lieu of video packages. Just like, mm-hmm. Hey, here's how we got here. Trying to tell the story.
Yeah, because it would take too much energy and creative effort to make a package.
And conveniently, the replays from this completely ignore the Jim Duggan segment on Thunder.
Because nobody's fucking watching Thunder. So Thunder is a house show. It's non-canonical.
Landstorm has a mic and sarcastically congratulates America for finally figuring out their election. He then gives America shit because he's like, yeah, congratulations, the guy who got the most votes lost.
I mean, the American election system is broken and does not work. You're right there.
Really? What about the last 25 years would tell you that?
Listen, man.
Storm then calls for the anthem, and Scott Hudson is outraged at this. Like, we're the nation's capital, and you're going to play this? I'm like, dude, chill. It's Canada.
It's not that deep, brother.
And would you believe it, it gets interrupted, which leads me to a new theory. They do not have the full file of this song.
Of the Cats theme?
No. The Canadian anthem. Canada? Yeah.
Jesus.
But yeah, so the cat comes out, and he has a mic mid-entrance. He says he'll kick Storm's ass, and he wants Storm and Mark Madden to go back to Canada. He then calls for his music so he can dance, and Jesus. It eventually plays after delay, and he and Miss Jones dance. And I'm like, huh, that's weird you're getting your shit in pre-match.
Yeah, you called this early, like, oh, this guy's losing. But you also called out that Miss Jones has, like...
one move.
Yeah.
I don't know that she even pops and locks it, but she just drops it.
She just drops it. She does not pop and lock it. She just drops it.
Oh, and something that does not come up later. The cat's dancing shoes are in the corner for this match.
Yeah. He wears them. He puts them on to dance. And then he takes them off.
These are the most devastating weapon that's ever existed.
His dancing shoes?
Yes.
Yeah, they're loaded or something.
The two shove each other, then lock up and chain wrestle. Major Guns grabs the leg of the cat, which leads to an argument of the cat and Storm. So Major Guns and Miss Jones... get in the ring and stare down. I'm like, why?
What happened to lead
it's
up to this?
Literally not about you.
Get the fuck out.
But this leads to nothing, because Storm hits Cat from behind and then tries to keep the Cat grounded. Storm hits a jawbreaker and Cat counters a suplex with an inside cradle. Storm locks in a rest hold as the crowd chants USA. Cat hits a pop-up low blow, DQ, but is hit from behind by Elix Skipper and then thrown around ringside, until the cat hits a water bottle shot, but Storm keeps the advantage. Storm repeatedly whips Cat into the barricade until Storm just dodges a kick from Miss Jones from behind, which then takes out the ref.
Yeah, I said Miss Jones kicks the crap out of the ref.
Also, should have been a DQ if she had kicked him. Also,
actually, he's unconscious. He can't count a DQ.
Well, I guess both if she had hit Storm and the ref. Yeah, but well.
This match needed this element, though, because before this... this match was so standard that it was boring me to tears. It needed some form of interference. It still needs more interference, but like this gave it something.
Major Guns dropkicks Jones and a messy brawl breaks out. Eventually, Storm hits a missile dropkick, but there's no ref. Cat hits a kicking combo, but Storm hits a Northern Lights suplex and Jim Duggan comes out.
There we go.
The referee gets distracted by just chatting with Miss Jones from the ring to the floor.
Well, she kicked him.
This is a whole different thing. Just like, yeah. All right, hey, I'm focusing on you because I need to ignore the spot that's happening. Aloha Cat leads to Jim Duggan getting in the ring and deciding not to use the 2x4, but instead hits a clothesline to the back. Storm rolls into a Canadian maple leaf and gets the win. Like, oh yeah, he tapped out, but I did not see it.
Sure.
Post-match, Team Canada attacks Jim Duggan and the cat saves him. And admittedly, I keep referencing the angle on Thunder. Dang on Thunder was better than whatever the fuck this weird post-match was here.
I mean, the interference from Duggan was also weird here. Like, he chose not to use the wood and just kind of, like, stiff-armed him in the back. Like, it's also weird.
Yeah, like, the Thunder moment was actually a really, like, nice moment that I'm like, one, if you do it in D.C. with Jim Duggan, like,
patriotic pride,
like, that would have been a great segment that, like, maybe would have saved this. This was just like, okay, they awkwardly stare down and no one knows where anyone stands.
It's just weird that, like, he still interfered. He still hit the guy, just not with the wood.
Yeah.
But he still did it.
Yeah, we get a loose explanation from Storm later, but it's not really worth it. This match was nothing. I mean...
yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, like, not the worst worked, but they used a lot of shortcuts to have people care.
Yeah.
Tony Schiavone then hypes up a special interviewer for tonight as the previous segment just kind of fizzles out. We see Mike Awesome arrive in an ambulance.
I'm sorry, in a what?
An ambulance?
An ambulance. The ambulance has arrived.
And then we go to our special interviewer for tonight.
No.
It's Buff Bagwell.
I hate this.
And he's so passive aggressive of like, basically, I'm not booked tonight, so, but, like, I, you know, we need ratings, so they got me. Brother, it's pay-per-view. There's no ratings.
There's no ratings.
Also, you weren't advertised, so no one bought the pay-per-view to see you.
How dare he think he can replace Pamela Pumpkins? How dare? How dare they think that Buff Bagwell is a formidable replacement for the pumpkin herself? Absolutely not.
I will say, as bad as Pamela was, Buff tonight is terrible. Because he's just trying to get his shit in.
Yes. The difference being, though, Buff knows what he's talking about. He knows what wrestling is. Pamela was, you know, a deer in the headlights a lot of the time. Bless her heart. Buff is passionate and he does get his shit in. He's got his character that he's got to do. But he knows what he's talking about. Unfortunately, well, he did okay, I thought.
He brings up the filthy animals and they are like, yeah, I don't care that it's a dual stipulation. It doesn't fucking mean anything. And Buff just like sucking up to them like, oh yeah, they're totally going to win later. I know it. It's like, shut the fuck up.
Go away.
And Conan gets bleeped telling Jarrett to shove something up his ass. And I was like, oh, weird, like weird censoring thing there.
Yeah, that's the only thing that they've censored. And they say ass all the time.
Yeah, maybe it's just the sexual nature of up the... it's also one of those things of, weirdly enough, when if you want to bleep asshole, you bleep hole, not ass.
Yeah, because like the context of the two words together makes it a bad word or something like that.
It's all stupid.
Yeah. A word's a word. Let a word be a word.
Speaking of stupid, backstage, Natural Born Thrillers tell Reno he's welcome to come back to the group after he's done with Vito. He tells them to back off, and that's the most I got out of this segment because it is mic'd terribly.
Yeah, Vito is yelling at the Thrillers. He's saying something. We'll never know what it is.
My hunch is that the mic is on the camera, and because the Thrillers are in the back of the shot, and Reno Vito and Vito are are facing towards the back, away from the mic, and it's like, well, I guess we'll figure it out later.
Context clues, I guess. I think he said go fuck yourself or something.
We then get a graphic for the hardcore title match and then cut to Crowbar scolding Daphne for not wearing her 70s gear. And she's like, well, I mean, like, the 70s gear fucking sucks and I think it's making you worse as a wrestler. I'm like, oh.
She calls it a poop sandwich, hold the bread.
Terry Funk then jump scares Crowbar with a fire extinguisher spray. And the match starts and the two brawl around the trucks as Daphne just yells.
Yells is putting it one way. She screeches.
Funk is just smashing Crowbar around and then pushes him onto a road case, which doesn't crash into anything, so he just goes for a little ride.
He just wee.
The two brawl in the back of a truck and Funk is thrown into the sides of the interior of the truck.
I really liked this venue for a hardcore match. I've never seen them actually go into the storage vehicles, like what they used to bring the gear to the arenas. This was cool. I thought this was very apt for a hardcore match.
Crowbar is hip tossed out of the truck through a table, like not a normal table.
Did not look cozy.
Also had a bunch of cables on it that just landed at him after. Ugh. Crowbar hits Funk with a random van door that's sitting around.
Oh my god, it's just like loose door becomes the Terry Funk's favorite weapon.
And also in this, he like throws the van door at Funk, which happens to like pop a venue door open. Which clearly was not meant to open at that time. No. Because Crowbar slams the door on Funk's head. And then Funk repeatedly smashed the door on Crowbar's head. And it's like clearly there's someone behind there catching this.
Popping it open.
From people actually dying here.
Yeah.
Then Terry Funk grabs some handcuffs. Handcuffs with also like a foot long chain. Like they are not tight ones here. But he handcuffs Crowbar. Then he grabs a steel chair. Then, for whatever fucking reason, we just decide to cosplay as Royal Rumble 99 I Quit match for a little bit.
Yeah.
Why the fuck did you invoke this?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
No one passes out. I'll give him that.
I mean, he didn't shoot pass out during the thing, but...
Foley, I thought he did.
No, that was part of the match.
I mean, the only thing I can say here is, like, Terry Funk is... friends with Mick Foley.
I mean,
so...
the other thing is they are doing lighter chair shots than
Very
The Rock.
Very much so. Yeah. Yes.
And they also come out to the crowd area, and Terry Funk has brought the van door with him.
It's his favorite thing. It's his new best toy.
Funk hits van door shots, and then Funk grabs a chair and just hits more unprotected chair shots. Commentary is trying to do like the begging him to stop, but
yeah.
Their heart's not in it enough, which I think maybe downplays it enough to where it's not as upsetting.
And you say unprotected, where, yes, it is unprotected as, like, a hand going up. Like, it's no Undertaker taking a chair shot. But Crowbar does kind of, like, maneuver the side of his body to kind of cushion the blow a little bit. Like,
it's
agreed upon, I guess.
The shots are also somewhere between Rock and Lance Storm.
That's a wide breath there.
Terry Funk then grabs a table and lays Crowbar onto it, but Daphne pulls Crowbar away. So Terry Funk just, like, goes after Daphne. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
Crowbar saves her with a chair shot to the back and then chokes Funk with the handcuff chain. Then Crowbar lays Terry Funk on the table and hits a slingshot crossbody to the floor from the ring on Funk and through the table. Daphne then throws a chair at Terry Funk's head, but it only gets a two. Funk hits a big chair shot to the head and then hits a pile driver on the van door, which gets him the win and the hardcore title.
Yay.
Admittedly, did not feel like the biggest spot of the match. Like, the table spot felt bigger than that. Just like, I wasn't surprised that was the finish, but I felt like they didn't end on their biggest note.
I did love Daphne's reaction to hitting him with the chair. Even if it was like a light little boop, she just like celebrates as if it was the crushing blow. Like, I love Daphne. She's amazing.
Yeah, agreed. we noted it plenty. Yeah, I did not care for the Mick Foley stuff. I actually glossed through a lot of it because they drew it out a bit. But I'm with you. I did like the backstage stuff. Oh, I thought that was a unique setting. And I'm like,
I love that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, this match, yes, it's bad vibes, but damn, I liked it.
I liked the first half.
Sure.
And I wonder if I would feel different if we didn't just kind of revisit Beyond the Mad.
Yes. Thanks, OSW.
That said, you were ready for this to be your best bit.
I kind of want it to be. There's not much to choose from on this card.
Well, let's move on to Mean Gene.
Oh, God.
With Team Canada, and he scolds them of, like, why would you do that to Jim Duggan? And Storm says he realized a month ago that Duggan's days were numbered, and he basically used him one last time. He also then implies the group is going to grow, but also is like, oh, once American, always American. It's like, okay, so Guns and Elix Skipper don't count, because why?
They're American. Guns was American first.
Then Major Guns tries to bring this home.
Oh, she tries so hard.
Gene, don't blame Canada. Blame yourself. Oh,
sweetie.
Honey, you stick around. I'll give you a different pole you can hang that flag on.
Is that what he said?
I'm paraphrasing, but yes.
Okay, we knew he said something euphemistic. And I didn't know if you went back for it.
It is hanging a flag on his pole. It's something in the, I don't have the exact word for word, but something, it is flag on pole.
Jesus Christ, Gene.
Elsewhere backstage, Lex Luger's organizing his gear and just shows everyone that he has brass knuckles for later.
He's also, like, showing off, or maybe this is just commentary not understanding what he's doing. They were talking about, like, his merch. Like, commentary was saying, like, all the stuff he was pulling out of his bag. Like, oh, look at all the merch he brought. But in the shot, it was like, it's just a t-shirt. It's...
Yeah, he had one thing for him, and that was it.
Yeah, and the brass knucks. I'm like, none of this is merch, guys.
Let's go to our next match. It is Vito and Reno, who, again, are brothers, with Marie, who is their sister, versus Chronic.
It's very important to establish a relationship, because I still think that Marie is sleeping with both of these men. Like, the chemistry is weird.
I don't know if this is a Ryan Shamrock type thing, admittedly.
Oh, I don't know.
Chronic grab a mic, and they imply that the person who has hired them this whole time has been Marie. And commentary is like, well, that's it. She's a bitch. I hope she dies. I'm like, okay.
Jesus. We haven't even confirmed it.
Chronic double team Reno until Vito makes the save. Everyone brawls to zero reaction.
I could not give less of a fuck about this match. I just don't care. It's crazy how little I fucking care.
Yeah.
I love Vito. I couldn't care less.
I feel like we haven't really cared about Vito in a little while.
Not since Johnny the Bull broke his penis.
Vito hits a power slam. Crowd's still not reacting. Vito and Reno double team Clark, who doesn't really sell. Clark hits a double underhook suplex, then chops Vito in the corner. Vito hits a mafia kick, and Clark actually goes down. I'm like, oh God, you're actually going to sell a touch.
Wow.
Brian Adams goes over to Marie. He's like, all right, pay me. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then does the most Italian hands I've ever seen. To the point where we were like, is this her acting Italian, or is this just she is acting and she is Italian and doesn't know how else to convey things?
Like, I get that.
Brian Clark hits a cannonball from the apron on Vito. Clark hits a chair shot on Vito, and Reno is just kind of around. Also, chair shot, DQ. Vito hits a jumping clothesline, and then his full Nelson slam, but Reno breaks up the pin. Chronic stay on Vito, and Clark hits a back suplex, then locks in a chin lock. The Natural Born Thrillers then come out to the ramp, and Vito hits a jawbreaker, but Adams just walks in to stop the tag. Like, that's fine.
Sure.
Scott Hudson starts asking why Reno keeps distracting the ref. I'm like, don't give the game away, fucker. Chronic hits double big boots. It's meant to be both men down and a double crossbody, but Brian Clark clearly lands on top of Vito. Ugh. Then Reno gets the hot tag and hits a roll of the dice on Vito. Swerve. Got him.
Hot tag is putting it.
Yeah, sorry. He got the...
generously.
He got the it looked at a microwave tag. Yeah, but Swerve, he hits a roll of the dice on Vito. And then he covers Vito. And Chronic bully the ref and they're like, count. So, in this match of Reno and Vito versus Chronic, Reno pinned Vito, so I don't know who wins.
It's... on Wikipedia, it's deemed a no contest.
That probably makes the most sense.
Yeah. God, I don't care. So Reno paid Chronic?
Yep. Marie comes in to be like, what's going on? Reno pays Chronic, and then Reno rejoins the Thrillers as Clark hits a meltdown on Vito, and Chronic then hit a high times as their music plays. So Reno rejoined Vito for 2 weeks just to swerve him at Starrcade. That's basically what happened.
Reno rejoined Vito just to confuse me.
Yeah.
That's all. Their names are too similar to be siblings. First of all, whatever parents did that, you're cruel. Second, no chemistry, no familial chemistry. Third, why does it look like you're sleeping with your kayfabe sister? Stop it. It's just confusing. It's so confusing. I'm glad it's over.
This match is one of those, if you ever need a reminder that, like, oh yeah, Ed Ferrara did work with Vince Russo. It's not all just Vince Russo.
Yeah.
But so in summary, the match that was already hard to care about had a swerve that no one cared about.
Correct.
So that one guy that people didn't care about could join the Natural Born Thrillers, who are really hard to care about.
Yeah. Yay, booking.
Backstage, Mean Gene is with 3Count, and Gene actually, like, puts them over unironically of, like, you guys worked really fucking hard. That was really impressive. And they're like, all right, who's facing Lieutenant Loco, a.k.a. Chavo Guerrero? Helms is like, nope, 3Count's the number one contender. Like, we're not...
We're doing it together. We both are. Handicap match, I guess?
Chavo then comes in just to kind of be a dick and is like, hey, I heard you guys won.
You were there.
You were literally there.
You were watching.
He then attacks them and is like, you haven't worked hard enough. And I'm like, so are 3Count face now? Like,
I don't know.
They might be.
I mean, they've always been face in my heart, so fine.
But Mean Gene did his job well in this segment. So let's go to Buff Bagwell, who's with the MIAs.
Correct. Plural. The missing in action.
He says it like 3 times too.
Yeah, the first time we thought we misheard it and he doubled, tripled down.
Buff wants to know if they're splitting up and Rection just shouts.
Basically, Buff asks a question and Rection is like, fuck your question. This isn't about that. This is about Starrcade. What?
Let's go to our next match. It is Bam Bam Bigelow versus Mike Awesome in an ambulance match.
Sorry, in a what?
An ambulance match.
No! Say it right.
You say it.
An ambulance! Time for the ambulance match.
Bam Bam Bigelow comes out in like a button-up tank top. I'm like, thank you. Looks better.
Don't call it a button-up tank top. That just makes it sound weird.
A sleeveless button-up?
Yeah.
All right. Awesome has new noise as he comes out because I wouldn't quite call it music.
It's the same way that they're not piping in crowd reaction. They're piping in crowd rumble. Yeah. This is just intro noise.
He also strips down his regular look and commentary acts like this is like revolutionary. I'm like, he does this often.
Yeah, yes, but like he's taking his pants off at the top of the ramp. It feels different.
If it's a Chronic in the sauna?
A little bit. It feels like Mike Awesome is getting naked.
As he's doing this, the ambulance comes out to the ring. And notably, the driver is in this ambulance for the whole time.
Yeah, he's just a dude. He's just watching it from the ambulance.
Match starts. Awesome hits a run up back elbow early and then clotheslines Bam Bam to the floor. Awesome hits a ring bell shot and then a chair shot to the back. Bam Bam blinds Awesome with a cup of like ice or something. Then hits a chair shot and slams Awesome's head onto the chair.
Bam Bam is giving it pretty hard here. Like he's hitting hard shots.
Yeah, the way he's moving, it does seem like he is injured.
He's definitely favoring his leg.
Yeah, he hurt himself somehow. Awesome counters a chair swung the wrong way and too broad of the ambulance. They use the door on each other and just generally throw each other into the ambulance. Then Awesome dodges a punch, which sends Bigelow's hand through the window, which I joked, like, oh, did he Goldberg himself? And He might have a little bit. Not nearly as bad, but...
God, no. There's a little bit of blood, though.
In a spot, it'd be weird to blade.
Yeah, you don't blade on your forearm.
We get the first of a couple boring chants in this match.
Did you confirm these were boring chants?
Yeah, and I'm wondering, is it because they're not showing things on the screen? So is it people can't fucking see? And they're like,
so
well,
it's boring, yeah. I don't know what's going on, so must be boring.
Well, this prompts the two to go back to the ring for a second. Bam Bam hits a DDT, and then they go right back to the outside.
Yeah.
Awesome gets a table up against the apron. He then winds up for like a big running clothesline. And as he's running, the last 10%, he slows down to like walking speed because he's going to get thrown through the table.
Ugh.
They go back to the ambulance. Awesome is soft slammed onto the hood. Bam Bam tries to climb the ambulance and the lights on it just like fall apart. Awesome hits Bigelow with the light bar and Bam Bam just falls through the roof of the ambulance. So Mike Awesome wins.
This thing crumbles.
Yeah.
In a way that ambulances are not built to crumble. It wasn't metal. I don't know how this happened.
Yeah, I get the spot you want to do. Yeah. I didn't think it was as cool as they thought it was.
And fucking Mark Madden kept being like, show it to us from the aerial view. Like, yeah. No.
Show us the fucking tarp you put over the crash pad.
Don't do that. So do you think that Mike Awesome is officially done with that 70s gimmick?
Yeah. I mean...
We're
running out of time for the next gimmick I know he gets, so... No.
He never really warmed to it the way that Crowbar did. Crowbar took that and ran with it.
Excuse me, the Lava Lamp Lounge would beg to differ.
I forgot that was even a thing, Nick.
I think it was mostly on Thunder, which didn't help.
Lava Lamp Lounge. Oh,
remember where like women would trash every week and it was a running bit and it was hilarious?
No.
This match was lame and slow, but I did not expect anything from this match.
But it's an ambulance match.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be so big and so chaotic and so crazy.
I think maybe the little bit of the spectacle of the end spot, I'm like, and the fact that it wasn't as stupid puts it above the last match, but...
I suppose, yeah.
And I know Bam Bam's working hurt, so I'm like, a little credit to you, but they didn't do anything,
nothing.
Man.
It was nothing.
Mean Gene is then with the Natural Born Thrillers, and first Reno says this is his real family, and Gene asks about the upcoming tag match at the Perfect Event versus the Insiders. And I'm just going to play this promo for you guys because it's bad and it's weird. And I don't know what either of these men are doing.
You know, you guys make me sick. But Commissioner Mike Sanders, you've got your own set of problems tonight because all of a sudden it is going to be, yes, these two gentlemen, the Perfect Event facing Kevin Nash and Diamond Dallas Page for the WCW Tag Team title.
You know, Gene, I know I'm your favorite. Hell, I'm everybody's favorite, but... We're not here to talk about me tonight.
We're not?
We're here to talk about the Perfect Event, and nobody says Perfect Event like the perfect event.
Just what I thought. Chuck Palumbo.
Well, let's see. First of all, you got Diamond Dallas Trailer Park Trash.
Trash!
Then you got that big goof, Kevin Nash.
What a goof.
I'm disgusted. Sean, take it away. Tell him how I feel.
Kevin Nash, Diamond Dallas Page, for the last 2 weeks, you run your cake holes about how these titles mean something to you. And at Starrcade, how you're going to get them back. Well, guess what, boys? We're at Starrcade, and guess what? You're not getting them back. Note to self, the ones who tell you that winning isn't everything are complete and absolute losers.
Losers.
And that's exactly what you guys will be tonight, as the Perfect Event will retain the tag team titles and go down as the greatest tag team champions in WCW history. And Gene, we got a little something special for you here at Starrcade.
What's that?
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, so Chuck Palumbo just is lost out there. And then Sean Stasiak, I feel like it's like trying to channel The Rock to where it just comes off inauthentic.
It's not Rock enough. It's Rock-esque, but it's not Rock enough. It's not like Hoovy doing the juice. It's not quite the same, you know?
Yeah, it's like he tape recorded The Rock and then tried to play that back.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, you're missing lore here. Sean Stasiak was fired from WWF for having a tape recorder in the locker room and record people's private conversations.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Yep. they fired him.
I'm sure that wasn't the final straw.
Well, apparently...
Or the only straw, I should say.
Yeah, apparently it was supposed to be a rib and it's like, don't fucking do that.
Well,
don't worry. We'll see plenty of him making an ass of himself during the invasion.
Goody. He fucking sucks.
They get him back.
Good.
But yeah, like, this was a bad promo from these guys.
It was a weird promo. It's all right. Somebody showed up to the show fresh and ready to go, though. Ready for his shot on the camera.
Wait, who?
Shane Douglas got a fresh dye job.
Oh, right.
He's got a new do.
Yes, our next
so
match.
So fresh and so clean.
It's for the U.S. title, it's General Erection versus the franchise.
Freshly dyed franchise.
Yeah, Shane Douglas took all the money they were going to pay Tori Wilson and got a dye job.
Yeah. I don't even know if he got a proper dye job. He may have just went and bought a $10 box of hair dye at the local CVS.
As a reminder, this man hates Ric Flair, and I'm like, how?
You are Ric Flair.
Douglas cuts a usual heel heat promo, and once again notes that Tori isn't here without ever saying her name.
So she's not blacklisted. Why are they not saying her name?
Well,
you don't get fined for saying Tori.
Don't worry. He still says two names, though, because he calls his opponent both Rection and Hugh Morris.
Jesus.
He also says it won't take 36 days to figure out who won this match.
That's election jab number two.
Also, it wasn't DC's fault. It was Florida's fault.
Right. Those hanging chads.
Match starts when Shane Douglas attacks Hugh Morris from behind and works him over until chops fire up Morris. The two manage to stumble on an Irish whip to the corner. Great start. Franchise pulls the ref in the way, but Morris stops short. Douglas pulls the ropes into Morris's balls three times, and then he's just hitting blatant low blows, which Morris no-sells because he is a Rection-type Pokemon.
Sorry?
You know, no effect on him.
So happy for you.
There she is no Pokemon type that is not effective at all against itself.
Anyway, I don't care enough.
Oh, that is barring abilities, for what it's worth.
Of course. You think I don't know abilities? Pfft, well, obviously.
We noted two of them last time.
I know.
Which were...
Uh-huh.
Cool. Hugh Morris then locks in a bear hug, and Douglas bites, but Morris locks in again. Shane Douglas's hands are completely free. Punch him in the face. It's that simple.
Or do one of those, like, old school, like, behind the head claps.
Yeah.
You know, something.
We get the arm drops, but Douglas lives and tries to scoop slam Morris, but ends up collapsing.
The ghost of Hogan's past.
Morris wants the raging climax, but is kicked off the top, and Douglas hits a reverse neck snap. Franchise hits a weak pile driver and then a swinging neck breaker. He then locks in a rest hold, and no one cares about this match either.
Oh my god. There is one point in this match, though, I think it's right around here, where Mark Madden just screams emphatically, "Die, fat ass, die!"
Yes.
I'm like, holy shit, man.
It's meant to be a play on his Dumb and Dumber reference, but yeah.
Brother, it doesn't land as a reference, it just lands as callous.
Morris hits a press slam and they go to the floor. Morris runs Douglas's head into the ring post in a way that did not look intentional, and on top of that, Franchise is bleeding afterwards and seems a little fucked up.
Yeah, we can't really tell if it's a blade job.
Well, I think we need to determine it was a blade job, but...
He also is a little fucked up. Yeah, he's really good at selling.
He's not.
There's a lot of botches on this show, I feel.
Oh, this is where we get the die, fat ass die, because Douglas dodges a raging climax and then slowly wraps a chain around his fist.
Jeez.
Morris dodges the shot, hits a back suplex. Chavo Guerrero then comes down and sneakily throws Douglas his chain again. Then points out to the ref, "Hey, he has a chain." Whoa. DQ.
Too far.
You fucking kidding me? He doesn't even fucking use it. Almost every match that could have had a DQ on this show should have, based on this fucking thing. Emily, where are these lax rules? Where are they?
Relax.
Where are they? Seems pretty tight.
Not pretty lax, actually. Sorry, babe.
Douglas then punches Morris with the chain, who pre-bladed. Like, you see him fully blading beforehand.
Yeah, it's rare that we get a blade job post-bell.
Well, also, like, he goes down from the punch that would have busted him open, and it's already, like, a liter has poured out. Like, okay, well, clearly. Yeah. Douglas had hit some of the weakest punches I've seen in a while, and then hits Chavo, and hits a terrible franchiser on both men. AWOL and Lash Theroux come out. Wall helps Morris to the back as Lash helps Chavo, and they kind of argue. And, oh man, this is a bad match.
Yeah.
With a bullshit DQ finish again for this group.
Yay.
Why is this group the only one that has DQ finishes?
Because they're trying to make Hugh Morris the, like, golden child. And, you know, he's Hogan take two. So he is the, like, say your prayers, eat your vitamins. So, of course, he has to abide by the rules.
But Lash Theroux got DQ'd last time.
He's associated with the same group that Rection's in. So that group is all American, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, play by the rules, don't get in trouble, kids. That's the only thought that I have.
Yeah, it's still bullshit.
It is bullshit, but that's the only explanation that I can think of.
Yeah, my explanation is...
Fuck you.
No, they want to do a certain finish, and so... Oh, no, now the rules apply.
Relax.
I still think the Reno and Vito match is worse.
Oh, that's my worst
match. As much as I'm annoyed by the finish of this, I think I also just don't care enough at this point for these guys.
Oh, God, no.
Moving on, we get Mean Gene with Scott Steiner and Medasia. And I'm going to play this for you, but Steiner says that the word of the night is beat.
Mean Gene, the key word tonight is beat. You got that? What is it?
Beat.
Beat. See, Sid Vicious, tonight, the first thing's getting beat is you. See, you made a mistake when you accepted Ric Flair's invitation for a world title shot, and the man with the largest arms in the world, the genetic freak, is going to knock your ass out. That's the first beat. The second beat, Mean Gene, is my freaks are going to take me back to my hotel room and they're going to beat me. See, it's a beautiful thing, Mean Gene, getting horizontal with the heavyweight champion of the world. See, I'm going to climb that mountaintop. I've been hitting switches on bitches all my life and I'm going straight for the big O.
Emily, are you here for Scott Steiner's big O?
No. What?
That's what he was looking forward to tonight, was getting the big O.
That's what Medasia's there for.
It's still wild to me. She's married. I think about that all the time.
Not to him.
Exactly, yeah. To one of the guys who fucking dialed him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that got dropped. Moving on. Glacier is coming again. And we actually see footage of his first run with commentary. Because I hear Tony Schiavone's voice and I was ready for it to be shitting on the segment. And I went,
they're not shitting on it.
Well, it was retro clips.
Oh, was it retro? That would explain it.
And yeah, blood runs colder.
This is a long promo for him to the point where I'm like, is he here tonight? Like,
he is not.
No, but it's a long promo, so I guess he's coming soon.
Yeah, you know Glacier, famous for totally going to be here next week.
I don't know who Glacier is. This is the first time we've seen this promo. It's a new promo. It's a longer promo. It's a more flattering promo. Maybe he will be here next week. We don't know. He's probably going to be here soon. I don't know.
Elsewhere, we get Buff Bagwell with the Insiders, and they all mock the Thrillers, and Kevin Nash just puts on fucking Buff Bagwell's bowler hat.
Nash looks fucking toasted.
Yeah. Buff wonders if the Thrillers combined are making as much as DDP, which kind of makes DDP uncomfortable. Also, like, that's a heel line.
It sure is.
And Nash is just fucking around to the point where DDP's like, all right, give him the real promo.
He's like swinging from this water bottle. And I'm like, is that water?
Yeah. Nash calls DDP Mr. Christmas. And DDP accidentally calls his partner Kevin Page.
Oh.
It's like, oh, what happened?
Oh, no. Love and marriage.
DDP does his promo, and then Buff asks Nash if he has anything else to say. And Nash verbally assumes this is to kill time. Then says Buff looks like Buff Masterson, and Buff does not get the reference.
Nope.
Emily, I assume you don't get the reference. It is a reference to the show Bat Masterson, which was a late 50s Western television show.
Oh, Kevin, with the timely references.
Yeah, so he does not give a fuck here.
Yeah, I don't think that's a water bottle, man.
Our next match, it is Jeff Jarrett and the Harris Boys against the Filthy Animals in a Filthy Animals bunkhouse brawl.
It's a Filthy Animals bunkhouse brawl street fight.
A bunkhouse brawl is a type of street fight. I don't know.
No, you gotta say both because it's a big deal that it's both.
Well, Jarrett cuts a promo also about like, yeah, the stipulation change doesn't really fucking mean anything.
Yeah,
and I'm
it's
like,
the same fucking match.
And it's just what weapons are around. And there's a bar in the ring.
Which I liked. I thought that was kind of cool.
Well, commentary notes. That's not a real bar because Oakland's not at it.
Oh my God, yeah. They just start shitting on Gene's drinking problem, I guess, which we've talked about over on our Patreon. I made his signature drink and yikes.
Scott Hudson notes as the match starts that, again, yeah, like the stipulation doesn't mean anything. I'm like, don't do it if everyone's going to go. It doesn't matter.
Right. It's this, remember when Seven happened? Like, why are we doing all this for y'all just to come out and shit on it?
Jeff Jarrett throws a trash can at Ray, who catches it, and everyone brawls to start the match and hits weapon shots. Scott Hudson names the heel group the Nashville World Order.
Sure.
Tigress joins commentary and says, these props are like weapons to us.
Yeah.
That's the point of this match.
Tigress.
And I'm sorry, gang. The first half of this match, there is nothing to note. It is just things happening.
It's just throwing shit.
Yeah, and holy fuck, Conan, I don't think can swing above 3 miles an hour.
Well.
Hogan Landstorm level chair shot energy from him.
This is just a nothing rely on the props chaos mat. There's like a fucking popcorn machine ringside. Like, this is just, what do we got in the back? What can we find? Fuck it, let's throw a bar in the ring. What?
Which I'm pretty sure is like IKEA special.
Or no, I genuinely do think that it's just like leftover props in the back of the arena from random shows that have come to the arena and just left their shit.
So everyone's brawling and commentary's like, I don't know how to win this one. Brother.
What?
Kidman puts Jeff Jarrett's head in the popcorn maker. Did you catch why Tony Schiavone said this is dangerous?
No.
Glass.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Ray hits a Bronco Buster on both Harris boys, then tries for one on Jeff Jarrett, who gets his foot up in the same spot we've seen like 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Commentary notes that Ray getting hit in the balls may cause issues for Tigress. Then Tony Schiavone's like, well, you know, I'm around. I'm sorry, what, Tony?
Hey-o.
You are married. Jeff Jarrett wants to superplex Kidman through the bar, but Ray low blows Jarrett, and they hit like a double chokeslam type move through the bar, which does not break all that clean.
Did you hear Mark Madden's line after this broke?
It was something about Oakland again.
He says, Gene cannot be happy right now. Closing time came earlier than he likes.
But also, like, there was like the metal bar at the foot of this. I was like, oh, this broke in a weird way to where I said IKEA because like it broke in pieces like that. It was not like a table kind of thing where like shattered into like small thing. No, this broke into like piece by piece, which creates an issue because then everyone has to like clear the pieces of wood out of the ring so it's safe to bump.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, these guys are professionals.
Well, I think it's more they don't want to bump on that as opposed to protecting their opponents.
Well, both. Both can be true.
The Filthy Animals hit a double bulldog onto a sign on a trash can. Rey Mysterio then hits a diving leg drop with a sign under his legs on Don Harris, then gets vaulted into a dropkick on Ron. Rey vaults Kim to the floor on one of the Harris boys and then follows up with a wheelbarrow bulldog on Jeff Jarrett, and he tries for a springboard Hurricane Rana, but Jeff Jarrett counters and powerbombs Ray out of the ring into a, like, large rolling trash cart.
Yeah.
Like, I rewound this. Like, he just makes this clean. It almost looked really gnarly.
Yeah, it could have been really bad.
So Ray is basically out. Then the referee starts stopping Conan from getting in the ring.
You know what? Good. I don't want Conan in this match.
Well,
keep him out.
The reason he's doing this... All right, everybody, on the aprons, we're doing tags now. What the fuck? In the middle of a Filthy Animals bunkhouse brawl strip, it's no DQ. It's all I fucking care about. Why the fuck are we doing tags in the middle of this? To the point where even commentators like, he must have blackmail photos on them, because why are they going along with this?
You're more passionate about this one than the last match that I thought you'd be mad about.
Which, the DQ or the random ladder match starting with the tags?
No, the DQ.
Because this one, they just should have ignored. The other one, all right, whatever, the match is over. This is, why is anyone pretending to do this?
Fair.
Kidman's hit with a spinning side slam and the Harris boys double team Kidman. The Nashville World Order stay on Kidman until Ron tries a powerbomb and Kidman counters with a face jam.
A face jam?
Kidman can't make the tag and keeps getting worked over and Jeff Jarrett locks in a Glargay sleeper. Kidman powers up on a third arm drop and then tries for a sleeper of his own. Jarrett slips out, but Kidman hits Kidman Faction and manages to make the hot tag to Conan, who cleans house and hits rolling clotheslines and a facebuster, but runs into an H-bomb. The Nashville World Order set up a table in the ring as Ray finally stirs to life. Ray hits a diving broom shot to the Harris boys and then just hits Jarrett with it. And we're back to not doing tags again.
Babe, you gotta let some of it go.
Ray lays Jarrett on a table and tries to dive onto the Harris boys, who catch him and H-bomb him through the table. Kidman then comes back and sends the Harris boys to the floor. Then it's a BK bomb and a kid crusher. Kidman pulls Jarrett close to the corner, and I'm like, is he setting up for a shooting star press?
No.
Nah, it doesn't matter. He's hit with a bottle. Jeff Jarrett hits a stroke on Kidman and pins him for the win. Kidman was not the legal man, so per Mike Sanders' rules, they should do this match again.
I think I figured out what it is about the rules. I think that the rules are not lax. They don't exist. However, you have a company full of professional wrestlers who understand that rules are required for matches to happen. So they default to standard rules sometimes, like a tag match requiring tags, and then have to remember halfway through that this company is a fucking joke that doesn't give a shit. So it's like having to rewrite save data in their brain of like, okay, this actually does not have rules.
Yeah, the one hole in that is the referee was the one who was actively...
But the referee is also trained to understand like rules. So he has to also remember like, right, this is dumb, sorry. Like, they all are kind of working at a disadvantage, I think, of like, they want to do things correctly, but they're actively being told to do things differently and wrong. So it's like fighting against their instinct, I think. Maybe I'm giving it... I think you're giving it
way too much credit.
Maybe I'm giving it something.
Thoughts on this match as a whole?
No.
It was fine. I thought once they got to actually doing spots and things, I'm like, okay.
It was chaotic. A lot of this match has been chaotic. This was more planned chaos and more choreographed chaos, I suppose.
It got there eventually. Like it said, did get the there. First third of the match, garbage. I'm like, there's nothing happening. Yeah. And yeah, the tag rules just baffle me.
I didn't even note the tag rules. Sometimes I just black out and wait for, like, from bell to bell, I'm just watching.
Yeah.
It happened. It's a match. It was chaos. It was just 9 to 11 minutes of just blah, and then it's over.
Post-match, we get a Sin ad, which I know Emily is really looking forward to.
Oh, I'm jazzed. I bet that's going to, like, shatter our expectations and really break some records.
Backstage, Buff Bagwell is like solemnly with Sarge.
Solemnly.
He's very like, oh, yeah, everyone respects you. And
Sarge looks lost and just confused. I don't think Sarge understands why he's part of this show.
I think Sarge didn't know how much of a promo he had to cut before Lex Luger attacks him.
Maybe.
So didn't really have a goal here. But yeah, Lex Luger attacks him and Buff like scares off Lex. And then he's like called like, coach, coach. And I'm like, I thought he was Sarge. Come on.
Yeah. What is his name?
Pick verbiage.
Coach Sarge. Sergeant Coach.
Commentary then just kind of chat as the ring crew clears the ring with all the weapons and Tony looks visibly over it.
We get some like glamour shots of the crew cleaning up the weapons. Like why? Why are we lingering on these guys just carting out weapons?
I think it's just like, why isn't anything happening? This is why.
Filler. Yeah.
We have 3 matches left. Our next one, it's the Insiders versus the Perfect Event with Mike Sanders.
Yippee.
For the WCW Tag Team titles. And we get an actual video package for this one.
It's rare.
DDP has a new theme here.
It's a weird theme.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a good theme.
It was at least a theme and not noise, but it was close.
I suppose, yeah. It's like a step above noise.
Ric Flair comes out before the match and tells Mike Sanders that if Sanders takes one step towards the ring, DDP and Nash will win automatically. That's right. If you take one step in the ring, they'll lose. Like, that's 2 different things.
Those are 2 very different things. Because, like, it's pretty rare that a manager enters the ring. Like, they stay ringside.
Yeah.
This isn't a stipulation. This isn't a thing.
I mean, Madej is regularly diving in, but...
Sure. But it's not like, obviously a manager is going to join. Like, Hyun does not join.
He does occasionally.
Does he?
Yeah, the last match we saw with him with Harlem Heat, he actually gets in the ring. And, I mean... Major Guns and fucking Miss Jones both got in the ring.
I mean, the women, I guess, is different because they do try to do things with the women. I'm thinking, like, Jimmy Hart does not join inside the ring.
Yeah.
He fucks around on the outside.
Yeah.
Sonny Ono does not get in.
Also, before the match, we get big We Want Hall chants. I'm like, unsurprising, given the location.
Yeah, because he's from Maryland. He's a Waldorf boy.
Nash and Palumbo immediately go to the corner. Nash hits clotheslines and punches and knees. Palumbo misses a leg drop and DDP tags in and hits a diving clothesline. Stasiak tags in and DDP stays on the advantage and pulls Stasiak's groin into the ring post. DDP hits a belly to belly and almost hits a diamond cutter, but Stasiak slips out, so DDP hits a spinning Uranagi. Page wants a diamond cutter again, so Palumbo just comes in and hits a jungle kick, then tags in for a second as the Perfect Event just beat down DDP, including an overhead belly to belly and a lot of stomps. That is a lot of the middle of this match, is just them stomping DDP, stopping him from making the tag.
Yeah, but you know what? Fine. D- DDP does hold his own in this match, and this match does benefit from the lack of Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
Well, it's really, also, truly does.
He's selling and trying to make the tag. It's like, oh my God, psychology? In this economy? In esta economia? Palumbo accidentally knocks DDP into Stasiak's balls, but Palumbo stops DDP from making the tag. Paige keeps trying to get to his corner and hits a discus clothesline, but is low-blowed pretty blatantly. Nash gets the hot tag and cleans house. Big boot to Palumbo and wants a jackknife. Somehow misses Stasiak climbing the top rope directly in front of him. Stasiak hits a diving clothesline. On the floor, Mike Sanders low blows DDP. Sanders gets on the apron, which doesn't count as the ring for some reason. Nash knocks him off and Stasiak hits a title belt shot. DDP stops the title belt shot to him and hits Stasiak with the diamond cutter, which they cut away from.
Why?
Paige pulls Palumbo off a pin and the other thrillers come out to attack DDP. DQ?
No, the DQ is only against Mike Sanders. Everything else is fair game.
No. Okay. I'm glad you said that, Emily.
Oh, no. What have I done?
DDP hits Diamond Cutter on Jindrak, then eats a kick from O'Hare, who goes up top for a Shauntan Bomb on Nash in the ring, but DDP crotches him. Tony Schiavone notes, well, that move would have resulted in a DQ, so that's probably good for DDP. So that would have been a DQ. Oh, so outside interference is a DQ. Wild.
Tony Schiavone is also fighting for his fucking life here, okay, man? Give him some grace.
Can't we all be fighting for our lives, Emily?
Give him some grace.
Actually, my note after that is, I doubt that. Nash hits a big boot in the ring, gets him out, jackknifes Palumbo for the win and the title. Then, post-match, Nash grabs a mic. Hey, yo, we got him again, which... The crowd makes no noise for. Also, they cranked the crowd ambiance during this.
Yeah, which is weird. Like, what does that even mean? Hey, yo, we got him again.
He's
what?
Just shouting out Scott Hall. That's all he's doing.
Okay.
I think the crowd really thought Hall was coming out, especially with all the people coming down.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, when they keep mentioning him, it's fair to expect them to come out. Like, we know he doesn't, but.
You're right. Like, in the moment of the day of. Yeah, for sure. God, this match felt... There were points where this felt like a Chuck showcase and a DDP showcase. Like, it was It was those two. And then the rest was just bad.
Yeah, I thought this was a pretty fine standard tag match of the work over the smaller guy to set up the hot tag. And then, you know, chaos energy finish. Like, bless DDP for running all around this match because... Yeah, he's selling the whole time. Nash makes the hot tag, and then is just pretty much back down almost immediately while DDP is doing everything.
I thank every star in the universe that DDP tagged up with Kevin Nash because that gave us something to hold on to.
All right, who is the worst person Nash could have teamed with?
I mean, with the Thrillers was pretty bad.
He wasn't doing anything with them.
But he was with them.
I think in-ring quality of like, all right, who are we going to pair Nash with?
Oh, God. Stevie Ray.
That might be worse than mine. I was I'm like, am I smooth?
He's second best to everyone. He's not good. He's just big.
Oh, actually, there's a contender for maybe worst partner in our next match. It's Lex Luger versus Goldberg. Yeah, Luger and Nash. That would be quite a team. Although maybe we'll get a worse Lex Luger team coming out of this. But it is a career-threatening, no-disqualification match, which I think I missed that this was ever made, no DQ. Announced it at the start, but...
Does it matter?
Well, I think just in terms of, like, Lex wanted the last match to end in, like, a afterwards DQ, so... I don't know, but there's a video package for this match as well. And then...
It's Michael Buffer time!
It's Michael Buffer time! Let's bring him out!
I hate that. Because you can only afford Let's Get Ready to Rumble once. And Let's Bring Him Out just does not hit the same.
Luger has his regular theme again, so I don't know why on Thunder they gave him the other theme. We get the full Goldberg entrance, except he goes right after Luger, who has bailed out of the ring. So Goldberg is hitting Luger as Buffer is finishing his intro.
Yeah. They don't even let him, like, wrap it up. Commentary also notes, like, oh, wow, isn't it amazing that our tables are still intact? Not for long, Scott.
Also, like how you're like, oh, they aren't letting Buffer wrap it up. Buffer's not looking up. He's just reading the fucking card. He's like, oh, they're fighting.
He's like, I'm getting my money. Fuck it.
Goldberg throws Luger around ringside for a bit. They go in. Goldberg's still dominant. Goldberg hits an underhook suplex, and Luger begs off but gets kicked. Goldberg hits a power slam, and Lex just decides to leave, so Goldberg goes to get him.
Sure.
Luger slips off Goldberg's shoulders and then pushes him into the ring post and throws him around ringside. Goldberg weirdly dodges chair shots because I think they're waiting for the next spot to happen. Because Buff Bagwell and Sarge come out to ringside. Buff is trying to talk Sarge down because, you know, Sarge got attacked by Lex Luger. Luger beats Goldberg down, getting in the ring, but Goldberg hits a shoulder block and wants a spear, but Luger pulls the ref in the way again, stopping Goldberg. Then Luger's like leaning out of the ring. Buff gets in the apron to save the ref. I don't know what happens here because Goldberg gets annoyed and goes over to Buff and the ref. Sarge goes over to Luger. Luger punches Sarge, like knocking him out. Apparently he has the brass knuckles on here.
Oh, okay. That would make sense.
Luger then punches Goldberg with the brass knucks, but Goldberg manages to kick out at two. Buff then just gets in the ring and wants to hit a blockbuster, and Swerve hits the blockbuster on Goldberg.
What? Is this even a fucking Swerve?
Like, Lex then throws Buff out of the ring for some reason, then wants a torture rack. Goldberg stops this as Buff hugs Sarge on the outside. Goldberg hits a swing neckbreaker, and we cut to Sarge on the ground because apparently Buff attacked him off camera. Goldberg gets a spear to jackhammer for the win as Buff is beating down Sarge. And, like, it's in his eye line. He's just ignoring this.
I just don't understand Buff's motive. Like, what is his motivation? Whose side is he on?
So Goldberg wins, and then post-match, Buff hits Goldberg with a chair numerous times, dances around him, then leaves with Lex.
Who the fuck is Buff Bagwell working with?
Lex.
What? How did we get there?
Conversations we didn't see.
Buff is just, you know, burning every bridge, fucking every person over, and just like, yeah, sure, you. What?
You and I recently chatted about his weird... See, double turn implies that you go back. His two-time heel turn in the same night on our first episode, where it's like, why are you making this so weird in, like, hiding your motive for all of 18 seconds?
Yeah.
Additionally... Goldberg then is on his feet and celebrates to end the segment, kind of nullifying the Buff beatdown.
Yeah.
Then Goldberg takes a child out of the crowd and takes him to the back.
Yeah, he just, like, kidnaps this child. I don't think that he was able to, like, get away from Goldberg.
During commentary, they noted that he'd be doing a bunch of Make-A-Wish work today, so I think he's one of the Make-A-Wish kids.
Got it.
But still, he just grabs this child. He's like, you come into the back with me. The parents don't come with.
It's like, yeah, he just scoops the child. If I didn't know anything, like, this poor child is missing an arm. Or maybe both. I'm not sure. If I didn't know he was doing the Make-A-Wish, like, clearly I didn't. It just looked like he kidnapped a child that could not fight for themselves. And the parents were like, sounds good.
This whole segment was a fucking mess.
It's so confusing. But I guess it's nice to know that Buff has been consistently confusing for... 2 years?
Yeah, but I mean, he was meant to be a face before this, and...
Was he?
Yeah, he Brother. Was wrestling heels, and people were cheering for him, so I don't know. But yeah, the match itself, without the weird interference stuff, it's like, it was nothing special. Like, everyone fucking knew it was going to be.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I don't know whether they wanted to do this spot and then thought of the Buff interviewer thing or what, but...
I don't know, man.
It seems like we took a really weird route to get to this.
Yes.
But I know this leads to the group Totally Buff, so...
Totally Buff.
Yes, the total package in Buff, so...
Oh.
Totally Buff.
Sure.
Totally Spies.
That's where my brain went.
So we'll get plenty of these fucking two. Because, yeah, Lex Luger and Buff Bagwell, that's a team I really have a lot of in-ring faith in.
Yeah, that's a cursed duo.
But Emily, with all that... That brings us to our main event.
Whoa, God, I can't even pretend to be excited.
The main event of Starrcade 2000, the main event of the finals real Starrcade ever. It is Sid Vicious versus Scott Steiner with Mid-Asia for the WCW title. And we get a video package that really highlights what a bad build this has been.
What build?
He got announced. And Emily, you know, if you think this build is bad... Mama says it be that way sometimes.
It's fucking terrible. It's fucking terrible!
And it's Michael Buffer time again.
At least somebody's getting paid today.
Guys, Buffer's going. Can we stop the music?
No.
Oh, no. Okay, it's gonna play the whole time.
Yeah,
got
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah, how much are we paying this guy?
Too much. Sid's rocking the long boys tonight. I'm like, weird look for him.
It is a weird look, but I still do prefer long pants to the undies. for any man.
Hopefully it keeps, you know, his like leg muscles contained.
Yeah, probably. It works like compression shorts. I just don't want to see that much thigh on any man. I can't do it.
The two lock up and Steiner hits big strikes in the corner. Sid hits a 10-punch spot and you can feel it like there. Like, this match does not have the big feel they want.
God, no.
This feels like any other match. Like, the last two Starrcade main events have had the gravitas and feeling. And I know the Sting and Hogan one does. The Piper one we just did, say what you will about it, it felt like a big deal going in.
It did.
Like, this just feels like a Nitro main event.
It feels like we had to figure out something for Scott Steiner to do.
I feel like you had that. I feel like you should have done Ric Flair.
Yeah, well, he's retired, Nick. Scott's a great wrestler.
Steiner bails to the floor and then comes back in and flexes. They do a test of strength spot, and Steiner like immediately wins it at first, but Sid powers out with an overhead suplex and then hits a leg drop.
Honestly, though, hot question. What is less interesting? A test of strength or a bear hug? Because fuck me, man.
Test of strength at least requires both men to be doing something.
I suppose.
Plus, occasionally you get funny Ultimate Warrior blowjob looking gifts.
Jeez.
On the outside, Medeja hits Sid from behind with the lead pipe, and Steiner hits chair shots. Commentary is like, oh, you know, it's a world title match. They're letting it go.
Meanwhile, there is a guy ringside who is screaming at, I guess it's in a minute, but there's a guy ringside screaming at Scott Steiner, that's a DQ. Scott Steiner goes down to him and just yells, screw you, fuck your DQ. That is a quote. And you know, in that last ECW show we watched, we found Time Tap Traveler Me. Yeah. This is Time Traveler You. Yeah. This is you. Be like, that's a fucking DQ! Screw you! Fuck your DQ!
Back inside, Steiner hits an elbow drop and does push-ups. He then hits a light backbreaker, followed by a spinning belly-to-belly, and then locks in the Steiner recliner, but they're like 2 feet from the rope, so Sid just goes, rope break.
Yeah.
Steiner then hits a suplex and locks in the Steiner recliner again, which lately has been making everybody die in like 3 seconds, right? But Sid powers up, and for some reason, Medeja goes the top rope and accidentally diving crossbodies Scott Steiner.
Yeah, how? Has she ever done a top rope like that before?
Oh, yeah, plenty.
Yeah, okay. I can't picture her doing top rope moves.
Oh, Mark Madden's had some weird, like, blow-up luchador kind of lines.
Well.
I think, or inflatable luchador, something like that. Sid hits a choke slam, but Steiner kicks out. So Sid locks in a cobra clutch and slams Steiner, but not before Steiner bumps the ref by just, like, either poking him or punching him in the eyes. Medeja distracts Sid so Steiner can hit a pipe shot, which this spot was weird because Sid's like half blocking them, but like he ends up going down. It just looks like he got hit with the pipe 5 times and didn't want to sell it.
Yeah.
Second ref, Charles Robinson comes in, but Sid kicks out and Jeff Jarrett then runs out to the ring because, okay, why
sure,
not?
Sure, why not?
Jarrett swings a guitar from the apron, but it's the one thing they didn't want to happen.
What?
And Sid ducks and the guitar hits Steiner.
How could we have let this happen?
Jarrett then pulls Charles Robinson out of the ring mid-pin attempt, and Charles Robinson fucking ducks a clothesline from Jarrett.
Hell yeah.
I'm like, wait, what? He goes back into count, but Steiner kicks out. Sid wants a powerbomb, but Steiner low blows him, then hits a running low blow before a T-bone suplex. Steiner pulls Sid in the middle of the ring, locks into Steiner recliner, and Sid passes out, giving Steiner the win, retaining the title. And there's a minute left, so Steiner celebrates. One of the side plates of the title is falling off. They gotta fix that.
Oh, I missed that. Hey, no post-show bullshit, though.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Given the Jeff Jarrett thing what it is, like, this was a relatively not show-ruining bullshit finish to Starrcade.
Yeah.
It was a whatever match. It was not as bad as I feared it would be.
No, it was totally fine. It was totally passable, but it's not a pay-per-view match.
No, it is exactly what you'd think these guys would do with the Nitro main event.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think this went like 9 or 10 minutes. Like, it wasn't like a big epic kind of thing either.
But unfortunately, like, that sentiment is kind of carried through this whole show. Like, nothing on this show felt pay-per-view worthy. Maybe the hardcore match, but everything else was just like, this could have happened on the Nitro.
Yeah. I mean, admittedly, I do think a lot of them feel like Nitro main events as opposed to Nitro mid-of-the-show matches. There probably are some exceptions.
I only say the hardcore match because it, like, does tie up a story in a way or just, like, pay off something. A short build, but, you know, something.
I do wonder how many Sid matches we're actually going to have left because...
Can't be many.
I mean, yeah, because ones we're going to review, maybe two, because I know he is one of the three people who walks out of Nitro tomorrow.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Walks out?
Yep.
Part of story or?
Nope. Shoot. They all come back. It's Sid, DDP, and Nash all walk out of Nitro tomorrow. I've told you about the DDP one because that's the Scott Steiner tries to take out his eye.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sid is just annoyed.
Valid. Anyway, let's talk about the match and the show.
Yeah. I mean, I think we said pretty much all there is about the match. I mean, it's disappointing, but unsurprising.
Yeah.
That, like, yeah, I mean, I love Sid, but Sid is not a great worker. And you put him in there with Steiner, who, like, this needed to be more big, meaty men slapping meat, and it just didn't really have that.
It really wasn't. Like, yeah, Sid and Scott should have been big, meaty men slapping meat. I don't know. Neither of those men really have that style either, so it wasn't fun.
I feel like they actually, frankly, should have done more, like, weapon-based stuff. Like, have you no DQ, you know, like, Flair wants it to be, like, absolutely decided. Like, do a couple table spots. Have some bigger chair shot. Yeah.
Something.
But, yeah, this show as a whole is, it's definitely...
It's a C.
It's better than a lot of the ones we've seen lately, but it's still bad.
It's a C. It's at least a C plus. It's a C. Like, it's fine. It's entirely average, but it is their granddaddy of them all show. It's not, though. Like, this is a huge culmination show. This is their end of the year show. This is supposed to be the biggest pay-per-view of the year. It feels like a regular Monday night show.
I mean, yeah, when you get 50,000 buys, you're not doing things right, and everybody knows it. I mean, yeah, when you actually look back through this card, it's like, we do hit a decent wall at that Chronic match, and depending on how you feel about the two matches, we either don't come out of it until the Bunkhouse Brawl or the tag title match. There is a lull of lack of quality in the middle of this show that really stinks.
We've just been talking about it for the last hour plus. I've forgotten.
Yeah.
It's fallen out of my brain already.
It's a very forgettable show with a very forgettable main event.
Yeah. There's a reason that this is in the history books. It's because this is how they ended the show. Like, if WCW continued for 10 more years, nobody would ever talk about this show.
Yeah.
Like, nobody talks about Starrcade 2000 anyway, other than, like, oh, it's their last Starrcade. If there were, like, even two more, Starrcade 2000 would be completely left to the dust.
It would be like Starrcade 95, where it's just like, oh, it was the thing that happened.
It just happened.
No one really cares.
Yeah, it just happened.
And I said during the main event, but... Like, the fact that you didn't have Flair do anything of, like, in-ring-wise for this, I feel like really hurt it, because you have him. He could probably still go. I know he is, you know, in a weird headspace right now, but there was no grandeur to this show, which...
No, zero grandeur.
Yeah, but look, last year wasn't really a good show either, but it did still have the feeling, and, yeah, this just doesn't.
I suppose, yeah, I mean, did the past couple years even have the grandeur?
Oh, At least in the main event. Goldberg Brett felt like a big deal at the time.
I guess at the time. That's
I mean,
thing.
Goldberg Nash in 98, that was a big fucking match. I know, bad finish, but...
Fair. You're right. I think I'm just looking at it with, you know, hindsight.
But yeah, I think that's going to be it for the final Starrcade and our first show of 2026 kicking off... Our last year of WCW proper.
Yeah. What a weird, bummer way to start the year.
I think it's fitting.
It is.
Also, it's fitting that we are immediately going not to the next Nitro. And we're like...
Yeah. We've been talking about our schedule coming up. And we're taking a break from Nitro for a couple weeks.
Yeah, because this is episode 149. So next up is episode 150.
Which means it's a shot.
And because it's a special 50 episode...
Sure.
Felt the need to do something a little special, and we are going back in time for our next episode. We're going to go one pay-per-view past our first episode, and we're going to review Fall Brawl 1998.
Woo! Yeah, we've been talking about it, and this is a show that we probably should have looked at more prior to starting the podcast.
Yeah.
It would have given us a little bit more context, we think. So we're going to go back and see how things were not that long ago.
Now, I also know that is a bad show.
Oh,
so
goody.
It's also going to be one of those, hey, it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows back then, which that we're also learning on the Patreon, that it's not all rainbows in the past.
No. So over on the Patreon, like we keep mentioning, we are doing the original NWO run. So we're going through 1996 from the inception of the NWO through their first year, I suppose. And we just recorded Starrcade 1996.
Yes.
And just released that on the Patreon right before the new year. So a lot of Starrcade going on.
And only one Starrcade left, but we have about a year for that.
Yeah. So we're talking about how we're going into 2026 and this is our last calendar year of Nitro proper. We got more, gang.
But hey, before we get to all that, let's wrap up this show.
Absolutely.
And let's go into best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emma, you were struggling. What is your best bit?
I guess I'm giving it to the ladder match.
Yeah, it is the best bit.
It's the best match. It was not the best ladder match I've ever seen, Chavo, but it was good enough. I wanted it to be the hardcore match. I really, really did, and I was trying to justify it, but the shades of I quit Royal Rumble, I can't do it. So, ladder match.
I think you're too harsh on the ladder match. I think that is a good match, and I'm also giving it to that.
Okay, fair.
Emily, what about your worst bit?
I think we might agree on this one. Well, maybe not. You have a lot of worst bits to pick from.
Yeah.
I'm doing the Chronic Reno Vito match.
I'm also in that one.
Are you?
That match was, even in kayfabe, pointless.
Yes.
But it's the one that in kayfabe was also a waste of time.
Yes. And it was bad, it was boring, and it was stupid, and it was confusing, and I hated it.
Everything else was accidentally a waste of time. That one was intentionally a waste of time.
It's one of those things where it went exactly how they wanted it to go. And to me, that is more damning than anything. Like, if you expected this to be, you know, this cool comeuppance finish...
Why would you?
Then it's different when it doesn't land. This happened exactly how they wanted it to happen. And they walked away from that match and were like, cool, success.
Mission, ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Yeah, nope, you sure didn't.
All right, and then who is your MVP, Emily?
I guess it's got to be DDP, just for proving... that we do not need Kevin Nash in that match.
All right, we're fully syncing up really? Then all three ways. Yeah, DDP, he was running all over the place during that match. So, yeah, that match is decent, and I think he is largely the reason why.
Only reason.
He is the glue holding that match together.
God, yes. God bless DDP.
Maybe honorable mention to Yang, who I feel like was kind of all over the place in his match.
Sure.
Didn't lay down his fucking
Kaz.
Head.
Yeah. Yeah, Jesus.
Well, as we mentioned, next up is Fall Brawl 1998. Followed by the next Nitro, and then we got two ECW episodes to fill the New Year's break in the actual timeline.
Yeah, so these two ECW shows coming up, that's our last foray into ECW.
Until the invasion, Emily.
Oh, God.
The Tribe of Extreme.
But we should enjoy it while we have it, because it's pure and it is undiluted ECW, which we do not get again in the future.
Well, with Fall Brawl coming up, if you want to listen to our back catalog and listen to Halloween Havoc, which is our first episode, or where like all that kind of goes, you can pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Also follow us on social media at Butts in the Pod, Butts in the Seats Podcast, and a couple other places. If you just search it, you'll find us.
Yeah. It's the same logo everywhere.
And as you mentioned a few times, we have the Patreon, patreon.com/buttsintheseats. $5 a month gets you over 40 bonus episodes.
We're coming up on our 50th over there, actually.
We have book reports, we have TNA, we just have a couple like random pay-per-views, just some fun over there.
Yeah, a couple of random movies, a couple of reality shows, like, we keep it light and fun. Or we try, at least.
Yeah, Emily will not do Hogan Knows Best Season 2.
God, no. Please, save me.
So, Emily, is like 12 months enough time to reset for our final Starrcade episode?
Is it really going to be a calendar year until we do Starrcade
Pretty
again?
Close.
Woof. You know, maybe. We'll see.
Well, we got a lot of stuff in between now and then. But
sure do.
But join us on our final year cover Nitro. But until we go back in time next time, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts and Seats Podcast.
Happy New Year. Bye.